This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. When most of us were first exposed to the internet, probably on AOL with a dial-up connection, it was little more than an amusement. And although that wasn't all that long ago, my, how things have changed. For most of us, the internet has become a necessity, a lifeline. And if that is what it has become in just a few short years, imagine how integral it will be to our lives in 5 or 10 years. And as we become more dependent on the internet, speed will become a major factor. And that is why when Google announced its interest in making Charlotte the next place it plans to roll out its fiber network, Charlotte took notice. Officials know becoming the next home of Google Fiber secures us more than bragging rights. It gives us a leg up on the digital superhighway, and that has amazingly positive implications for consumers, businesses, and our economy. But Google isn't making any promises here. They're just testing the waters, and we have a team of people trying to sell Google on Charlotte while making plans for this potential network, and a few members of that team are with us for the hour. Jeffrey Stovall is Chief Information Officer for the City of Charlotte. He is the co-leader of our efforts to land Google Fiber. Thank you for joining us this morning. Morning.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Phil Rigger is Assistant Director of the Charlotte Department of Transportation, the other co-leader of this project. I'm curious why the Charlotte Department of Transportation is involved in this at all. Why?
Well, the Charlotte Department of Transportation, is one of our core responsibilities is managing how utilities use our right-of-way. We have 25,000 acres of right-of-way in the city, and you can imagine that when Google Fiber, if they choose to come, builds out a fiber network, they will want to use our right-of-way.
Okay, and we'll be talking about that because that can be somewhat disruptive, I suppose. And Joanne Hovis is president of CTC Technology and Energy. She directs all of the company's business consulting and strategic planning work and is an attorney with a background in communications and a recognized authority on the broadband market and the evolving role of government in the provision of communications services to the public. She joins us by phone. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Mike. Nice to be with you.
There's an article in, the business section of the New York Times this morning about Google Fiber and about fiber networks in general, because it's not just Google that has been rolling this out. There are some municipalities that have rolled this out. Wilson, North Carolina is one where the city took it upon itself because of depressed economy to roll out a fiber network of its own with speeds that equal Google Fiber's network. And the article talks about how we are 17th, I think, in the world in terms of access to speed on the internet, and we pay a lot more for a lot less than other parts of the world. And in those parts of the world, Joanne, where they have this speed and this lower price, it's because governments got involved. What's the reluctance here?
Yeah, I think we have a different political culture when it comes to this kind of infrastructure, Mike, which I think is unfortunate because this infrastructure is a national interest matter. This is not just a matter of how many channels of television we get or how much we're entertained over the internet or over cable TV. This is a matter of the platform over which our democracy and our economy increasingly function. As you mentioned in your introduction, this is just a fundamental part of our lives and its importance is growing all the time. So some of the national governments in our competitor nations in Asia and in Europe have recognized that and have taken steps around planning and funding and incentivizing the private sector in some cases and in building public infrastructure in some cases. And my read of what's happening in the United States is that we are increasingly getting there and understanding it, but the leadership has been very much at the local level and to some extent the state and federal level.
Mm-hmm. Most of us who just send emails with no attachments, the dial-up would actually work fine for us. But if you are sending in the habit of sending larger files, if you're in the business of having to send gigabytes or terabytes of files, you really do need a fast connection. And if you don't have access to one, you move. And that's what's happening around the country. Is that right?
Yes, we are seeing a growing phenomenon of businesses in particular who have very high bandwidth needs locating to places where they can get a lot of bandwidth and where they can get it cost effectively. So the remarkable phenomenon of a business from one of the coasts relocating to Wilson, North Carolina, or Chattanooga, Tennessee, or Lafayette, Louisiana, all of which have municipal fiber networks that offer gigabit speeds, this is a sort of stunning outcome. And for those few communities who are first to get to this kind of infrastructure, and hopefully Charlotte will be one of them through the partnership with Google, for those communities, this is a massive differentiator in attracting companies and attracting workers, in attracting certain kinds of jobs and creating economic activity.
You can go on the Google Fiber website and you can compare the speed that you have available to you today to their speed, but it's a visual representation and it takes time. So I thought, now what can we do to demonstrate this on the radio, which is an audio medium? So I thought, okay, since Google promises 1 gigabyte per second, which most of us can't fathom, but I will tell you that it's 100 times faster than today's basic broadband. They say with that speed, you could download 100 pictures in 3 seconds. If you have 5 megabyte per second connection, that download would take 9 minutes and 20 seconds. At 10 megabytes per second, 4 minutes and 40 seconds. And at Time Warner's fastest speed with their signature service of 50 megabytes per second, it would take 56 seconds to do the same thing. So how do we illustrate that? We illustrate that with this. Aaron, play our opening theme music. Now, this is the piece of music that we use to open this program every day, and is precisely 60 seconds long. We could let this play for 60 seconds, but I think everybody knows how long a minute lasts. Take that out. Now, if we did that 100 times faster, it would sound like this. That's it. Let's do it again. It would sound like what? That's it. So that gives you an idea of the difference in speed. And actually, that is not 100 times faster. It's slightly slower than that. I got tired of compressing it after a while. Phil Rieger and Jeffrey Stovall are with us from the city of Charlotte here. Both of you are co-managers of the project. Talk to me about how you're dividing up whatever responsibilities there are to work with Google on whether or not they will choose us. Phil.
Sure. So my role is really more of an operational role. I am most adept at working with utilities and particularly managing how they use our right-of-way, trying to manage through conflicts, trying to ensure that when utilities are installing their facilities that they're not interrupting other people's services. So, you know, Duke Energy and Piedmont Natural Gas, AT&T and Time Warner and many others are already there. You can imagine a spider web of wires and conduit and pipe that are scattered across this urban area. Mm-hmm. And in some parts of our city, you literally could remove the earth and walk across the spider net. And so trying to thread another fiber service through the city in some places will be like threading a needle. And so our staff is really adept at doing that. Now, right now, Google is evaluating the city of Charlotte, and so they have posted a checklist. It's available on the internet, and they're asking all the cities that they're evaluating to provide them information. And that's what I'm doing right now.
One of the things that they want the information for is because they don't want to duplicate the effort that's already there. If there's already conduit available to run fiber optic cables through, they don't want to put their own conduit in. They want to use those conduits, and they want to know where they are. Correct?
That's correct. They're also just trying to figure out what the easiest path is for them to put their facilities in with the fewest conflicts.
And Jeffrey Stovall, you are kind of the guru in terms of what this means to the city.
In terms of our technology and the technology that we have at the city, one of the things that I've been doing is to reach out to other cities, mm-hmm. To Chattanooga, to Raleigh, other cities that have already started this journey. Already have started putting fiber out there for their citizens and really starting to compare what does that really mean for the community. How can we learn from their experiences? How can we learn from what they've done to really deliver something for the Charlotte community that will be a differentiator? We are talking about infrastructure. This is infrastructure that will be around for a long time.
The first city in the country to get Google Fiber was Kansas City, Kansas, followed moments later, literally moments later, by Kansas City, Missouri. And we'll be talking to the assistant city manager of Kansas City, Missouri later in the program. Joanne, this fiber optic approach, you say, moves internet connectivity to a completely different level. But Google isn't the only company doing this. Isn't AT&T's U-verse a fiber optic network?
So it is not fiber optics all the way to the home or business, Mike. Mm-hmm. What AT&T has deployed is fiber optics into the neighborhood, sometimes to the curb, but from where they bring the fiber into the neighborhood, they then connect to their legacy copper infrastructure, which is a much older technology, some of which was deployed many decades ago.
So what kind of speed can you get on the internet with that service if you have a fiber optic connection from the street to the house?
So with Google's infrastructure, which is fiber all the way into the house, mm-hmm. you can get that gigabit, and frankly, with new electronics, you'll be able to get many times that in the future as our needs evolve. If copper makes up that last mile, the so-called last mile from the neighborhood into the house, that old copper, you're greatly constrained by that copper. It was a wonderful technology in its time, and it still delivers speeds of 5, 10, 15 megabits, depending on how it's designed and what kind of equipment they put in, but it's a fraction of what fiber can deliver. And most importantly, it's not future-proof. The thing about fiber is that it is completely unconstrained for the future. Once that fiber is there, Google will be able to change out the electronics as technology evolves and scale up in speeds many times without having to rebuild the network in the streets and in the rights of way, whereas that old copper really is sort of at the limits of what it's able to do.
But
it can't grow much further.
What happens when Google gets to the house? Say you order the service, they come to Charlotte, they put their copper fiber in, the fiber optic cables in, they bring it to the outside of your house, then what happens? Do they go into the walls of your house with fiber optics to your modem, or do you go on copper from the outside of the house to the modem, and doesn't that then slow the service down?
There's no question that the internal wiring and capacity can make a difference, but different companies do this in different ways, and they do it differently depending on what the consumer wants. But the fiber will usually come into some kind of a connection point, either outside or inside the house, perhaps in the basement where your phone wiring is. And then it's distributed throughout the house, either using wireless, and Google has built into its technology Wi-Fi capabilities to bring that connection throughout the house without a wire, or using the existing wiring in your home. And if your home is newer, you will have much more robust, newer wiring.
Well, one of the things that is clear is that when you use fiber to get to the home, you get a massive amount of data that can get to your home. But you still have to go over copper or wireless in order to get to your laptop. And I think that's an important part of talking about the offering and where we're going with this, because what you're going to get is ultimately going to be limited by not only what's in the middle, which is the Google Fiber, but what is also coming from your site that you're going to, as well as what you're trying to consume on your laptop. So there are going to be points that you don't have a full gigabit.
Right.
But being unconstrained in the middle matters a lot.
Who will this matter most to, businesses or consumers? Businesses, I would take it. And don't most businesses who really have high-capacity needs already have a T1 connection or something higher than that?
Yeah, but the T1 connection today is not nearly sufficient. So when you really start looking at who's going to benefit, I think it's all of us. The residential offering, you can think about what you do with maybe Netflix today.
Mm-hmm.
If you're running Netflix and you can't get a good signal, you don't have enough, then you really don't see the full potential of the internet.
And if you have kids and they're watching Netflix and somebody else is playing an online game and you're trying to get work done on your computer, that can really bog you down, and you won't get bogged down with this fiber optic situation. We have to take a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and UNC Charlotte Department of Music, presenting Bach Brandenburg Concertos, April 9th, UNC Charlotte's Robinson Hall. Tickets at coaa.uncc.edu. Well, after 10 years of war, America has a lot of men and women coming home, and their years of service were preceded by training, lots of training, to become very specialized individuals willing to take on the most dangerous missions. Then they come home. They find themselves trying to lead normal lives, to fit in, to find a normal job. It's something that isn't easy, and we're going to find out more about the challenges faced by vets in life after the military tomorrow at 9.
Fans and media alike hate the NCAA, but if you think schools will abandon the beleaguered organization anytime soon, you haven't heard from Donna Shalala.
We are the NCAA. It's not some independent regulatory agency that we're not part of.
University of Miami President Donna Shalala today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us this afternoon from 4 till 6:30 on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the possibility of Google Fiber coming to Charlotte. We are one of 34 cities that they are looking at. We're talking about it with Jeffrey Stovall, the Chief Information Officer of the City of Charlotte, and Phil Rieger, Assistant Director of the Charlotte Department of Transportation. We'll talk about their infrastructure needs a little bit later on in the program because that's why he's involved in all this. Joanne Hovis is the President of CTC Technology and Energy and a recognized authority on the broadband market, and in a short while we'll be joined by Rick Usher, the assistant city manager of Kansas City, Missouri. They hold the distinction of being the honor, I guess, of being the first Google Fiber city. Is there a need, a real pressing need for all this? And it's on the surface of it, the answer seems obviously yes. There's a real need for this, and yes, there is a demand for this. And I'm just curious. We hear all this talk about letting the marketplace fill the need for the demand. Why hasn't it been filled? Why hasn't Time Warner Cable or Comcast in other markets or AT&T or other phone companies jumped into this?
Well, this need has existed for a long time. If you remember back in the 1999-2000 era, we had a telecom bubble that burst. And a lot of that telecom bubble that burst was about meeting internet demand. And much of what was laid in terms of infrastructure at that time was long-distance fiber. So some of the capabilities that we're talking about getting to your home right now really started 10, 15 years ago. The problem with the long-distance fiber was you still couldn't get it to the house. Mm-hmm. You could not get the full demand.
Why can Google do it?
Google has deep pockets.
That's Google the answer? Doesn't Time Warner Cable have deep pockets?
It's an extremely expensive operation.
Of course it is.
It's extremely expensive. And as we can see, Google hasn't chosen to go everywhere with their offering. They're definitely picking their choices.
When did they come to us? When did the possibility of their coming to Charlotte surface, and how did it surface? Did they call you on the phone, send you a letter? What happened? Did you call them?
They contacted the city manager's office in February and okay. really indicated that this was something that they were interested in doing, and they were interested in doing it very soon.
Joanne, Google is an internet search company. They're a force behind the Android mobile telephone operating system. They have their own Android phone manufacturer. They recently bought the company that makes the internet-controlled Nest thermostat. They're working on robotic cars. They want to be ubiquitous in our lives. Why are they interested in the enormous expense of building a fiber optic network for internet and television? Why?
So Google, I think, like many of us, has been concerned that the growth of the broadband platform, the infrastructure out there in our communities, has stalled in the United States for a variety of reasons. And for them to sell the things that they do, like search and like Nest services and everything else that's intrinsic to their business, there needs to be an incredibly robust broadband platform out there for the internet to operate over. And Google had been lobbying the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, and so on for policies that would enable the evolution, the building of big fiber optic networks. They had done that for a while. And then at a certain point, about 5 years ago, they said, well, we're going to demonstrate how we can do it. And that's when they started talking to communities and asking communities to express interest. And the program seems to have grown from there. But the vision seems to be that Google wants to lead the way in moving the internet, moving the broadband platform from where it's been for the last 10 years or so since the advent of the cable modem era, to a whole new realm where we go to speeds that are 100 times what we deployed 5 and 10 years ago, and where we're able to innovate and experiment over this big, open, unconstrained platform. And that, in my opinion, is an excellent thing for the country to have.
This service is, as I said, currently available in Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas, Provo, Utah, Austin, Texas. They're building it out in those two cities right now with plans to expand to 34 additional cities, including Charlotte. If you Google Fiber, you eventually come to a checklist of the things that they have to happen to bring the service to any of these new cities. And here's one of the things it says. We will, and this is a quote, we will be working closely with the mayors and staff from each of these 34 cities. And Patrick Cannon was quoted talking a lot about the potential of Charlotte being one of the next cities to get this service. What impact might the current situation with Patrick Cannon play in Charlotte moving forward with this effort?
It shouldn't have any impact. The role of the mayor is not an operational role for working on these types of issues. And so this is something.
Do you know if he had any direct dealings with Google?
I do not.
So it should not have an impact, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. They have provided Charlotte and the 33 other cities that they're looking at with this checklist. And you began conversations with Google in February. The checklist is 29 pages long. What's on it?
Yeah, the checklist has got various items that they're looking for, but you can categorize them in about three big categories. One category is information about the infrastructure that already exists in Charlotte. And so they'll be collecting information not only from the city of Charlotte, but also from Duke Energy, Piedmont Natural Gas, AT&T, to the extent that those companies are willing to provide it. And that's so they can design around their facilities.
Is it in AT&T's best interest to help Google come into a market where they have U-verse and a telephone network that is aging out? Is it in their best interest to be cooperative? Because they put up some roadblocks in other cities.
You know, obviously AT&T will be a competitor to Google. However, AT&T owns about 10% of the utility poles in Charlotte. And anytime a utility wants to attach a facility to another utility's utility pole, there's usually a lease. Mm-hmm. And so there's a revenue source there for AT&T along with the competition.
But do they want to become a telephone pole company? Because that's essentially what would happen here, I would think.
Well, I believe that AT&T has their own motivations in terms of their own business plan that may be different than what mm-hmm. Google has. We don't clearly know what Google's business plan is for Google Fiber. We know that they're very much interested in promoting the use of broadband and the expansion of broadband across the United States. That's clearly obvious.
You told WFAE News, Jeffrey, that this is not a bid, this is not a competition, it's an evaluation. But really, isn't it a competition? I mean, if we lose this, that's not a good thing.
Well, it's not a competition in the sense that there are going to be winners and losers
amongst
the cities. And let me explain that very clearly, in that Google is not putting us in a position today to say that if you win, they lose. What they're looking for is all of the cities to really adopt practices that would allow them to be able to come.
Explain that. Suppose they choose Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill over Charlotte.
They won't choose Raleigh-Durham over Charlotte. And see, and that's, I think, the point is not a competition between Raleigh and Charlotte.
But wait a minute. I think we're splitting hairs. See, we're being semantically untruthful, don't you think? I mean,
no, I'm not.
If Raleigh gets Google Fiber,
yes,
and Charlotte does not, or vice versa,
yes,
the city that gets it has a leg up.
The city that gets it has a leg up, but there's no reason why both cities shouldn't be able to get it. That's my point.
I'm in total agreement, by the way, by Mike. What Google has said is that they want to build in all 34 cities and towns that are on the list, and it's not a competition among them. It's just a question of how the feasibility works out for each one. So they're not competing against each other to get Google's.
But like anything else, if you are first, you have a leg up. The first television station in Charlotte was WBTV, and for 30 years they were number one because they were first. Coca-Cola was first, and they have maintained a fairly tight race, but they've maintained leadership in that race because they were first.
Well, you're seeming to make the idea that concurrency and actually building out these networks in parallel in all the cities simultaneously is not possible. It is possible to do that if you have enough funds and enough resources to make that happen.
If who has enough funds?
Google? If Google has enough funds.
But if Google...
Google does.
All right. Well,
Google has said publicly that they're unconstrained from a capital standpoint.
So are you telling me that it could be possible that Google would say to all 34 cities, we're coming, we're doing it?
Yes, that is what I'm saying.
What's the likelihood of that happening?
Well, we don't really know, because I think the notion of what it takes to get inside of the door is still being evaluated. And so when we say that it's not a competition, it's an evaluation, they're trying to evaluate what does it take to be able to establish these networks in these cities.
You've worked, Joanne, with Google in the past on this and say that they are willing to foot this enormous bill. It is an enormous bill to do this. But do cities have to grease the skids in any way? Do they want any in-kind services? Do they want tax incentives?
They're not really looking for tax incentives. What they're looking for is facilitation around the construction process. As you said, this is an incredibly costly process. It's time-consuming, and it's a massive effort to build up and down every single street in a community. And what they're hoping for, and I think what they've asked for on this checklist, is for the cities to say, yes, we will facilitate. We will try to streamline our permitting processes and add staff so that you will get permits processed as quickly as possible. We will give you access to data and maps where we have them that are relevant so that you're not reinventing the wheel and remapping stuff that we've already mapped. We'll give you access to infrastructure that might be helpful, such as conduit, where you can pull fiber rather quickly and inexpensively rather than having to build in that same route. So they're looking for this, this support in terms of facilitating the process, but not traditional economic development type supports like tax incentives.
How much extra effort have you had to expend at the city level on this so far? And if they say we're coming, how much more effort, how many more personnel will it be devoted to? How many people do you have to hire to do the work that Google needs to have done to make this happen?
Yeah, we're not really sure yet, Mike, but that's a good point. You can imagine that building out a fiber network across 300 square miles of city is going to be a major effort that will require us as the Department of Transportation to manage that work. And we do that to minimize traffic disruptions, to make sure that there are no other utility conflicts. We're not sure what that'll look like yet, because Google has not given us a plan yet. Mm-hmm. But we expect that we will probably have to – our first effort will be to redirect resources that we have to do that before we would add additional.
Although Charlotte always likes to be first, we will not be the first to get Google Fiber if we get it at all. That distinction belongs to Kansas City. Actually, Kansas City, Kansas, and 15 seconds later, Kansas City, Missouri got it. They were Google's first fiber city. March 30th marked the three-year anniversary of Google's announcement to roll out fiber there, and we wanted to find out how that happened and what it has meant to that town. So we're joined now by Rick Usher, who is the assistant city manager of the Google Fiberhood, formerly known as Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning. Welcome.
Morning, Mike. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Google came to Kansas City in 2011. What impact has it had?
It's been an amazing experience for the Kansas City region, and personally for me in city government to have a project like this that really touches all sectors of our economy and all social implications, really across the board. You can go anywhere in the city and hear people talking about the project or the benefits they're hoping to achieve.
What happened to the legacy companies who provided internet service and cable television service prior to Google's arrival? What has happened to them?
They've, from what we've seen, they've stepped up their game. Time Warner is, in some cases, laying fiber in parallel, so oftentimes with the same contractors. AT&T has been promoting their services, and there's competition is a good thing in this market now.
Did Kansas City woo Google in any way, or did Google just walk in the door of City Hall one day and say, "We're coming"?
It's been a heavy lift. We started working with them in January of 2011. And the checklist, I wrote an article in GovTech about what cities should do to support Google Fiber, and commented that the checklist would have been great, because we received those questions in usually late-night phone calls with a 24 to 72-hour turnaround time expectation.
I also read yesterday that Charlotte had an opportunity at this earlier on when they started their fiber enterprise at Google, and Charlotte did not go according. We did not go and seek them out. Why not?
Well, at the time, we were pursuing a different broadband project, one that was going to bring an LTE capability, that's wireless capability, that's very similar to the cell phone technology that Verizon and AT&T use. We were pursuing a project with the federal government to provide that type of capability for our first responders, our police and firemen. And at the time, we really did not have the capacity to do both that, which was a more certain project than Google, than the Google Fiber project at the time, which was extremely speculative because there were hundreds of cities across the United States that were trying to bid for that.
How many citizens or companies in Kansas City abandoned their previous internet provider to sign up and switch to Google?
I really don't have any idea. They're not sharing subscription numbers with me.
Did you switch?
Yeah, I did.
And so tell me about tell me what it has meant to you as a consumer, as an individual.
Well, for me and my wife and son, I've got a 20-year-old who is a gamer, and he's been building websites, and we had an experience prior to our connection where he was using a game capture card through some online gaming and discussions, you know, friends of his were having, and then they would post the videos to YouTube. With our previous provider, I'll, you know, not name names, it on YouTube it said 222 minutes to upload. So we took his video on a jump drive down to that, and in Kansas City is a couple of coffee shops that Google hooked up to let people see how it would work, and he uploaded the video in 6 minutes. Mm. We came home, and the other was still loading. So since that time, for just, you know, our normal web browsing is just faster. The Wi-Fi is faster. Downloading bank transactions, that kind of thing. It's really kind of a no waiting kind of thing.
Yeah.
Browsing the web, you know, I guess like reading the paper, you would wait for a page to load as you're turning the page of the paper. There's really none of that happening.
You know, Joanne, it seems to me that there are a lot of people who may be listening who don't really have a great need for this and don't understand what this would mean to a city to get this kind of service, whether it's from Google or some other company. But you, I believe, have compared this to or made the analogy that this is not unlike what happened when we first put electric lines across the country, that they were there to turn on light bulbs. We never fathomed that there would be dishwashers that would be powered, or computers, or microwave ovens, or refrigerators, for that matter. We can't even fathom what this will mean, can we, the average person?
That's exactly right, Mike. The insight here, I think, is that we are hopefully developing across the nation a platform that will enable innovation and learning and new applications and new prosperity for 100 years to come in the way that the electrical grid did. Mm. When we put the electrical grid out 100 years ago, it was for electric light.
Let me stop you there because I have to take a break. We'll come back and finish that on the other side. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Blumenthal Performing Arts, presenting former Vice President Al Gore May 13th at Belk Theater. Mr. Gore will discuss key drivers in global politics, technology, and other critical areas shaping the future. Tickets at BlumenthalArts.org. The Supreme Court has struck down overall limits on federal campaign contributions for the first time. It's considered in some ways a follow-up to the Court Citizens United ruling 4 years ago, which dramatically changed the face of politics, and this promises to do, well, to take it even a little further. Diane Rehman, her guest, will discuss the new ruling and the role of money in political campaigns coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. We're going to come back and talk more about the prospect of Google Fiber coming to Charlotte when we come back.
News happens on the weekends, too.
After threats that they would not take place, hundreds of South Koreans are traveling to North Korea to meet with relatives 6 decades after their separation followed.
It's hard to see crippling sanctions here at this modern shopping mall in northern Tehran. The shops are stocked, the cafes are full, the latest Western electronics, even iPhones and iPads are available.
We'll keep you posted on Weekend Edition, Saturdays and Sundays from 8 to 10 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the prospect of Google Fiber coming to Charlotte. They have 34 cities in their line of sight. We're one of them. We have gone through the checklist. We're going to submit that checklist on May the 1st. Jeffrey Stovall, by the way, is... Let me start over again. Jeffrey Stovall is the Chief Information Officer for the City of Charlotte, and Phil Rieger is Assistant Director of the Charlotte Department of Transportation. They are helping with the logistics of all of this. Joanne Hovis is President of CTC Technology and Energy and a recognized expert on the area of broadband. And Rick Usher is the Assistant City Manager of Kansas City, Missouri, the first city in the country to get Google Fiber. I had to interrupt you, Joanne. We were talking about what this is going to mean, and for a lot of people, it's difficult to understand or even to fathom what this is going to mean. And maybe you wanted to finish out what you were saying before we took the break.
So I would just say that 100 years ago, we never anticipated the many things that we developed because we had an electric grid throughout the country. And that, by the way, includes the internet, because there would have been no fax machines, no computers on our desks, no laptops, or anything else like that had we not had all of that electric power. So much like electricity, the internet and broadband are a platform that enable growth and development. And electricity fueled our prosperity as a nation for 100 years. And broadband, I believe, will do the same in the future.
I may have already asked this question. I don't know that I have. But I did ask why they're interested, how they can afford to do this. But I'm just curious as why they want to do this. Why does Google want to do this? They have so many other things that they're involved in. What's in it for them? Just data collection?
We don't know everything about what Google's business model is here.
And therein lies the rub.
And I'm sure there are many benefits to them around data collection, learning, infrastructure ownership, pushing the broadband market to a new level. It's a very sophisticated and very savvy company, but we think that they are not alone in identifying that big broadband, gigabit speeds and fiber optics are part of the infrastructure of the future, and that the rest of the world, well, not the rest of the world, but many of our competitor nations are ahead of us, unfortunately, in deploying that kind of infrastructure. And if we're going to keep the United States competitive, we need this kind of infrastructure.
Which gets me back to government assistance. Why, if we know we're so far behind, I think we're 17th in the world, we pay far too much for far too little already, and there are other countries that are light years ahead of us, why? And it's so important to be competitive in a world marketplace. Why haven't governments, local, state, federal, gotten into this?
Many have. I think there is more and more recognition among governments about the importance of this. There are about 100 municipal fiber-to-the-home networks and communities well represented in the Southeast, by the way. And then there are thousands of projects underway of communities making conduit and fiber available to private companies with an eye toward hoping that they can create these kinds of public-private partnerships to enable new private investment.
Let me turn the question to Charlotte. We give money for things like upgrading football stadiums. We've been asked by the Bobcats Hornets to upgrade their five-second-old arena downtown to the tune of $41 million or something like that. If we're willing to give money to projects like that, why aren't we chafing at the bit to do this?
Well, there are some restrictions that municipalities in North Carolina in particular have for being able to put out networks that serve the public, public broadband networks. And some of those rules have been in place for the past few years. The situation that you talked about in Wilson, where Wilson built out their own their own municipal network, is not really feasible under state law anymore.
They changed the law?
Yes.
Why?
Well, the legislature moved to change the law essentially to inhibit the concept that a local government might be actually competing against private business for broadband access.
Mike, if I may add something to that, by the way, one of the unfortunate outcomes of that law, which was lobbied for very heavily by Time Warner Cable, one of the unfortunate outcomes is that in rural parts of North Carolina where there is no broadband service or there is extremely inferior broadband service, municipalities cannot build their own networks and operate them, even though the private sector is not interested in building next-generation broadband in those communities. So it's not just a question of whether municipalities are competing against private entities. It's also a question of how can we address rural communities where there's no private.
Sounds like we're stabbing ourselves with our own knife. That's what it sounds like to me. How do Google prices compare, Rick, in Kansas City with what came before or what currently exists? I mean, I know that you can get internet-only service. You can get internet and television service with Google Fiber. But what does it cost?
Well, the gigabit service is $70 a month. Their television package is $50 more, so $120 for their basic internet TV package. If you want free internet service, it's 5 meg download, 1 meg upload. You pay a $300 connection fee, and that can be paid over a year, $25 a month, and then you get free internet for 7 years. I'm actually hearing of a lot of folks that are signing up for that. And then, you know, putting that money, you know, hopefully other spots of our economy.
And that 5 megabit per second speed, that's standard internet speed on most services that exist today, correct?
That's about the basic service level that you're going to get.
So if you really don't need fast internet service, this is the way to pay $300 and get it free after that.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, on the need side, I would compare it, maybe your listeners would, you'd love to go drive on Charlotte Motor Speedway, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what we're seeing with Google Fiber, we have the infrastructure, this high-speed infrastructure. Like what I've experienced in a couple of cases are the limitations of my equipment. At City Hall, we've got a connection we're using to power our guest Wi-Fi network. We've got 100 meg switches in our network.
So that slows everything down. Mm-hmm.
We've got just the device you might be using, the Wi-Fi card you might have, might not be gigabit enabled.
Mm-hmm.
So it's allowing, it's really, I'd say it's a platform for innovation that we're no longer limited by the infrastructure. We're just limited by the equipment that we might.
What did Kansas City have to do to get Google set up? In other words, how much disruption was there for the city? Because we're talking about construction crews coming in and running wires on phone poles. We're talking about going through conduits under the street, maybe digging up the street in places. How much of a disruption was it?
Oh, it's ongoing. Construction's ongoing right now. Been under construction for about 2 years, and it is. They're an overbuilder, which means they're building all their own fiber, stringing fiber on Kansas City Power and Light's electric poles. They did lease some poles from AT&T, and then much of it is underground. There are the last report was 6,000 miles of fiber have been run in the city, and we've got over 1,000 people in the field from, I think the number is pushing 100 subcontractors. Mm.
Now, I know that Charlotte is going through the checklist right now, and you're going through the infrastructure, and you're going to lay all this out for Google by May 1st. But from what you know now, how much of a disruption might this be if they choose to come here? Because what will they have to do above and beyond just stringing a line down the street?
Well, it's It's a linear project, so they're constantly moving through your streets.
Okay.
As an example, a residential neighborhood friend of mine, he said it took him a week to run through. Now they'll be back when they come in to make the connections to the houses, but certainly not as disruptive with the directional boring machine.
So Phil, in Charlotte, what will that mean in Charlotte?
Yeah, we're looking at the other cities, Kansas City and Austin, to try to get a sense of what that looks like. And, it's still unknown, but we expect to have 6 to 8 crews working all the time. And our policies today try to prevent utilities from working during rush hour traffic to keep that disruption as minimum possible. We'll continue to look at our policies to make it as streamlined as we can for Google. But my guess is residents will know that Google is in town, and in some cases they'll feel the impacts.
Not that this is a competition, so please no wagering, but will Raleigh do the same thing?
Yeah, I believe Raleigh will do the same thing.
Just to give people another idea of what the impact of this high-speed fiber optic network would mean, whether it's provided by Google or anyone else for that matter, Fitch, the credit rating firm, upgraded its outlook on Kansas City last year from negative to stable, and one of the big reasons was the presence of Google Fiber. Why, Rick Usher?
It was an item mentioned in their rating. There were a lot of other things we've done on making our city financially stable through our budget process for the last few years. But I believe what they said in that was basically what we've been talking about, that it's a platform for innovation, that it's technology that will help advance our economy.
And Charlotte's been talking for years about diversifying its economy since the downfall of the banks. Here in Charlotte, we're looking to be an entrepreneur, to encourage entrepreneurship. We want to become a technology city. What does this do for us if we get it? How much exponentially does that increase the chances of that happening?
Well, I think what we do if we are able to get this is that we have a new opportunity for people who want to come to the city specifically for jobs that are enabled with technology. So that could be people who are actually creating software products or are using software products in a way that really requires a high bandwidth type of connection to be effective. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a catalyst. It becomes part of what your city is known for in being able to facilitate high-end entrepreneurs in the technology field.
The internet has and connection to it and high speed and reliability has become so important to businesses and so important to individuals. And with the number of people now who work from home, not having an internet connection for an hour or two because there's an outage someplace has become a critical problem. Is it time, Joanne, for governments to regard this kind of service as a public utility?
At a minimum, I think governments should regard it as a critical economic interest matter. As to a public utility, I think that's going to vary from community to community. Many will see their role as offering it as a utility in the same way as they offer other critical infrastructure that enables the community to survive and thrive. And many will feel that this should be the province of the private sector and will look for partnerships and ways to facilitate in the way that Charlotte is with Google right now. My personal belief is that communities should make that decision about how they want to engage broadband themselves, that we shouldn't make that for them. But I do believe that each community should be thinking about broadband and what its role can be, because this is not a matter of entertainment. This is a matter of our economy and our democracy and the platform over which they increasingly travel. And that's why it's of such essential importance to a local government.
But there is an entertainment element to this, which we have not talked about, and that is the fact that they do deliver television over this. Even the basic package, I think, is 200 high-definition channels. And what I've read about this is that the HDTV on this fiber optic network is clearer than we get it in Charlotte now because there's less video compression. People aren't even aware of this, but if you watch certain shows and the scene is particularly dark, you'll see artifacting because you're not seeing every pixel change every 30 times a second because it's just it uses too much bandwidth. But with the fiber optic network, that doesn't happen. The DVRs can store far more information than the current DVRs can. They can record 8 shows at a time. I don't know how you'd watch all that, but that has happened in Kansas City. Is that right?
That's right. And, before I got it, people were telling me they felt like they got new televisions. They hooked it up to their existing HDTV, and it's like they got a new TV. And then since we've had it, I would agree that it's a much clearer picture. And you're exactly right. They're almost unlimited by bandwidth, so they're not compressing.
If for some reason we don't get Google Fiber, if they don't come here, will the city work in any way, aggressively or otherwise, to find another company to do something similar? Would they push Time Warner or Comcast when they come here to do something similar, or would we just stand back and say, okay, that's it. We didn't get it?
Well, the city's always looking for opportunities to expand opportunity for businesses and for citizens.
How critical, Joanne, do you see this to the success of any modern city?
I think it's essential. I think that for now it's a massive differentiator, and we are seeing companies and people moving to cities that have this kind of infrastructure. As more and more communities get this infrastructure, it'll be a differentiator for the ones who don't have it because they will be struggling to keep up. It's so fundamental to how businesses function and how young people communicate and to what we spend our leisure hours and our working hours doing that it's just essential to economic activity, but it's also essential to education and healthcare, Mike. There are so many applications that are emerging right now that are enabled by this kind of infrastructure. Everything from monitoring, 24-hour monitoring of people with chronic conditions so that they can stay in their homes rather than being hospitalized, to the same kind of monitoring of older people who want to stay in their homes rather than moving to assisted living facilities. This infrastructure enables us to improve the quality of life and the things that we do through broadband in ways that are going to be more and more important to the citizens of our communities.
I have 30 seconds. When will we know whether or not we're going to get this, and what can any average person do to help?
Yeah, we'll know no later than the end of 2014, calendar year 2014, maybe sooner. And the average citizen certainly can go out to Google's internet site and express interest.
And also make sure to contact your elected representatives who will be in some role having to support this as well.
That's Jeffrey Stovall, Chief Information Officer for the City of Charlotte. Phil Riggers, Assistant Director of the Charlotte Department of Transportation. They're co-leaders on this project. Joanne Hovis is President of CTC Technology and Energy, and Rick Usher is the Assistant City Manager of Kansas City, Missouri. Thank you all.